When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. And I got a couple more thoughts today on character design. This is the part two to thinking about just a few random things that I like to throw at the wall when coming up with new characters for projects. This time focused on the inner world of the character, the personality, the different kinds of surprises and unexpected things we can find in our character when we start thinking about how they behave, what they want, and all that kind of stuff. And once again, I'll throw out the caveat that these are by no means some kind of formalized list of... there's no standardized testing in writing as far as I'm concerned. I just a lot of the arts is doing what feels right and then asking yourself based on experience what seems to work for you, what matches your vision for the project. I mean, there's so many variables to consider here. You got to consider what's right for the story. You got to consider what's right for you as an author. You have to consider what's right for your audience, like what your intended audience is if you have one. And then there's also just like general writing theory, some like commonly accepted beliefs. But throwing all that stuff out the window and just thinking about just generating characters in the context of something like a 30-day challenge like you guys are currently experiencing, have some thoughts on thinking about personality and finding the unexpected in your character. First on my list is one of my favorite ones. This is one of my favorite things to look for when I'm building a character is complexity via contradiction. Okay? And this, again... like I said last time, this goes for whether you're doing a really vibrant, sort of pared down, simple story for young people or whether you're writing something that's a little bit more sophisticated and maybe for the masses or the ages. The fact of the matter is that every one of us has contradictions inside of us. Every one of us, we are not perfectly consistent human beings. If we were, we would be the Borg. We have conditional scenarios in our heads that change the way we feel about things. Cognitive dissonance even sometimes, right? Meaning that I'm a health nut, but I just can't stop myself from the occasional binging on chocolates. Why do I keep coming back to food analogies for explaining how a character would behave differently or behave in a surprising manner? I don't know. I guess I like food a lot, which surprises me. There, I found an unexpected twist in my character. But let's talk about somebody else's character first, and then I'll talk about how I use this in one of mine. Let's talk about Avatar The Last Airbender, Sokka, who is one of the main characters. And if you haven't seen this series, I'll just bring you up to speed about the character really quickly. Is one of the reasons that I love Avatar so much is all the characters have layers and surprises to them that a lot of writers of fiction for young people just don't do for some reason. And Sokka starts out being this very silly comic relief character. He's the guy who's going to fall into the snowbank head first and his legs are going to stick out of the snowbank and wiggle around. Okay, he's the guy who uses slang all the time, like modern-day Earth slang. Which seems somehow incongruous with this fantasy world of Avatar. He is not the most eloquent at describing what he's thinking all the time. He'll use a lot of clumsy language to comedic effect when trying to describe what he's trying to say. But, on the other hand, he is a brilliant tactician. And throughout the series, he grows more and more into this role of being the tactician of the team of heroes. Because let's face it, all the other heroes have the power to bend. So like there's an earthbender, a waterbender, an airbender, a firebender even. There's all the different elements of bending going on. But he's the one normal guy. And so it turns out that his quote-unquote superpower is his ability to plan and think on his feet and come up with tactics to respond to crises. But it's consistent with his character in the sense that he doesn't suddenly change into a different person when he's doing tactics. He still uses his slangy, informal method of describing things, but the thinking behind this kind of silly behavior is very complex and sophisticated and rich. So he's a great character to look at and pick apart for that kind of the complexity via contradictions, things that you wouldn't expect on the surface of the character. Another way to do it in a little bit more sort of, what am I trying to say, straightforward way is what I did for the project I'm working on now for this coloring book for this nonprofit organization, where I was creating a whole new world of superheroes. And I can't remember if I talked about this character or not, or if I even showed him off to anybody, but I thought that it'd be fun to have a Lucha Libre wrestler in the team. And so I started with a visual and with a sort of like a general sense of, okay, a guy with a wrestling mask and like the tight pants. And okay, so and what's his ability? He wrestles really well. Well, what's the contradiction? Where can I find an unexpected twist in what we would expect out of this guy? Well, maybe he's like the greatest wrestler that ever lived. But okay, so he's really good at wrestling. But what's wrestling about? Wrestling is about pinning. It's not about destroying. It's about subduing an opponent so that they can't move, and so then the referee can come in and slap the mat a couple times. And I thought, okay, well, wait a second here. Wait a second. So maybe this guy's the greatest fighter who ever lived, but deep down, he's a pacifist. He hates fighting. He only does it because he knows that it's required of him. He's needed in this great struggle against these bad guys. And so he makes the compromise in his life that this gift he has for fighting, he uses it only in the form of wrestling, because wrestling is not about killing somebody or wounding somebody, but about holding them down. He never hits when he can pin was like the tagline I came up with for his character. And what's more is even the name Turnbuckle Tootweiler. You know, when you think of a Lucha Libre wrestler, you think of something like El Magnifico. And I thought, well, that's expected. We would expect like some kind of, you know, ridiculous name like that. Let's just make it like a country boy kind of name, you know, down south country boy. And that would also defy our expectations a little bit. But that's more of like the whimsy that I'm going to get in a second. So ask yourself, what is it about the way this character acts? What different level of complexity can you add to them by just turning the whole idea of the character on their head? So Sokka, slangy, silly. Okay, we assume stupid. No, let's make him really smart, but he expresses himself in a silly kind of way. Turnbuckle Tootweiler, big old muscly warrior, but inside he has nothing but the greatest empathy for the world around him, and he uses his specific fighting style as an answer to the fact that he has this deep empathy and this conviction of pacifism. Okay, what about defying the expected with a new direction? Okay, now this character, I'm pretty sure I did not share with you guys before as I was talking in some past Thunder Punches about this freelance gig I got. But when I was having lunch with Dan Mishkin and I was telling him about the job, he said, I had an idea for a character who was going to be an underwater warlord character. Because underwater warlords like Merman are fun for me. And so that's all I had to start with. And I think I was going to call him Prince of the Ocean was going to be his name. And I wanted him to be like this sad, forlorn, beautiful prince, sort of out of the pages of a shoujo manga. But so like Prince Namor or Aquaman, but with long, beautiful hair and kind of a sad, whispery voice all the time. And that was the surprise I had. Well, Dan said, well, what if his name was just Fishman, like the Jewish name Fishman? And, you know, Fishman, Prince of the Ocean. And he pointed out how it came from a Seinfeld joke where I guess either George's parents or Jerry's parents were talking about how they kept calling Spider-Man Spider-Man, you know, like as if that was his name. And that got my wheels turning, like, okay, well, what are some expectations we have of ocean warlords? Man, this goes all the way to Poseidon, doesn't it? Is you're under the sea, you're all alone, you're quiet, you're aloof. This is in the Silmarillion, Ulmo, he is alone. The ocean warlords are always these kind of separated from society characters, and they're a little bit, what's the word for it? Inscrutable. That's the word I was looking for. They're almost like a Vulcan. You just can't quite piece them together because they don't have any social graces. They're just separate and aloof. And they've explored this with characters like Namor the Submariner and Aquaman and some of the different iterations. So I took this assumption and I said, okay, well, let's play to that assumption. So Fishman is going to be the standard underwater warlord who is aloof and alone and doesn't have social graces. But what kind of unexpected twist can I put on that? Well, what if I just played him like Woody Allen? What if his lack of social graces came out of the fact that he was just generally a neurotic guy and an unhappy guy and just a complete sourpuss, but not in the sourpuss in the kind of rich Shakespearean tones of a Submariner, but the sort of the kind of like, it'll never work. Nothing works out for me. Nuts. Life's not fair. He's that kind of guy. He's sort of like the pain in the butt to have around in the downtime, but he'd be really useful in a crisis because after all, he's an ocean warlord. So that's funny, and that's unexpected, and that is, but it plays to our expectations. That a fun thing to do in writing is to play to the audience's expectations right up until a point, and then twist it on them, and then that delights you, and it delights them. And let's go back to gender again. I know it's a dangerous ground, but one of the things I like to do also is when thinking about my characters is how can I defy assumptions about gender roles? So I did a post on the Comics Are Great site. If you go to comicsaregreat.com and click blog, scroll down a little bit. I did a post a while back called Drawing for Myself, Nora. And I put in the post five never-before-seen pages. They were pitch pages for Equalizers of the Divide, which I did with Sarah Turner. And in those five pages were two more characters who didn't make it into the final first edition of the comic on sugarycereals.com. And one of them was a guy named McPhee, and another one was a girl named Nora. Now, Nora was, it was kind of hard for me to not put her in the first issue, but there was just no room for her at that time. Because I always liked these kinds of characters, is the small, adorable girl with the personality of a Jimmy Cagney kind of character. Now, I know, and I said in the blog post that this is Toph from Avatar The Last Airbender, but in my defense, I came up with Nora well before I ever saw Avatar The Last Airbender. I think even before Avatar was on TV, or maybe just when it was coming out on TV. Before, now that I think about it, that was back in 2005 or 6. Anyway, this goes back to talking about body type too, which we talked about in the last one. I took a small, adorable girl who, when you look at her, you think, oh, she must be sweet. She must be like a Shirley Temple kind of character. But then all of a sudden she opens her mouth and it's just crude filth that comes out. And she's got a bunch of bad hygiene habits. This is Toph from Avatar The Last Airbender, too. It's like she's picking her toes. And she's this adorable little girl, but she's like immensely powerful. And she's got this kind of like, I don't take crap from anybody kind of personality. Another character that I came up with back in 1998, Maggie from the Art School Girl series, was exactly this character. We came up with four female leads, and they each had a different kind of inflection of sort of this parodical look at, you know, stereotypes of art school girls. So you had Sarah, who was the leader, and she was the overt feminist, doesn't shave her armpits, save the whales kind of activist early 20-something character. Then you had Batik, who was the soft-spoken girl whose head's always in the clouds, and she's going to college to meet her husband, that kind of girl. She's always dating a different guy every week, and her folder has a whole bunch of initials like TL plus BBA, TLA, True Love Always, with a heart around it, but then that one will be crossed out, and there'll be the new boy of the week in a different heart. And then there was Acrylic, who was this Arrested Development in the sense that she had the mind of an 8-year-old, you know, but she's in college and she's really small too. We're playing with that kind of flexibility of manga where you can have a wild variety of body type and people just take it for granted. And Acrylic is the super hyperactive girl who's always on a sugar rush. You never see her eyes. Nina from The Front, if you've read The Front, she was based sort of on the same kind of type of character. This like super chipper to an annoying level kind of girl with a very innocent look at the world, which makes it fun to read. And then lastly, Maggie was the metal sculptor major who just had the personality of a James Hetfield. You know, she likes to shoot guns. She likes to eat really greasy meat. She doesn't like to shower too much if she can avoid it. And she's constantly smoking cigarettes and she never takes her sunglasses off. And everything that comes out of her mouth is cynical and crude and rough. When I say define traditional gender roles, I mean, I'm just saying in a very, very broad sense. Don't mistake what I'm saying for misogyny, saying that women aren't crude, because I've known my share of women who are very crude. But by making a cute young girl suddenly have the personality of like, a Jackie Mason or Abe Vigoda or something, that can be an unexpected twist that makes an interesting character. Lastly, I'm going to close with talking about whimsy. These tests that I throw at myself, these little check marks that I look at, are only there just to sort of get the ball rolling. I also think it's equally important to let whimsy do the talking sometimes. Let's look at Silver and the Periodic Forces, which we've been talking about recently. I think we talked about it extensively on an episode of Art and Story called The Big Reboot. And in there, I highlighted the fact that originally, in the original conception of Silver, who I created when I was in fifth grade. I was like 10 or 11 years old. He wore a magic glove, a quote-unquote magic glove that could summon warriors representing each of the chemical elements. Where did the glove come from? Who are these chemical element warriors? How does the glove summon them, right? In the end, I decided that doesn't need to be answered. When you're writing this kind of a story, which is this elevated sort of hyperbolic young people fiction, that kind of thing can just stay because it's neat. It just activates the imagination. Wow, magic glove? You know, it was given to him by the ghosts of his fallen, people of his world. Neat idea. Whimsy can also be beyond conceptual. It can also be physical whimsy, you know, just like when you're talking about going back to last episode when we talked about shape. One of my favorite cartoon characters of all time visually comes from the 2001 cartoon series Transformers Robots in Disguise. I talked about Transformers. In that series, there was a character called X-Brawn. Now, X-Brawn turned into a BMW SUV. I don't remember. The M-Class, I think, is what they were called. They were really popular in 2000, 2001. You saw them everywhere on the roads in the United States. And when we typically think of robots, we tend to humanize them a lot, especially in kids' fiction, and they are fairly symmetrical. Well, the neat thing they did with X-Brawn is the whole hood of the car became his right arm, or maybe his left, which it became one arm, and the other arm was comparatively thin. And even in his file card, it talked about how that arm is like really, really strong, the bigger arm. Even the hand is on one arm is bigger than the other arm. This was in the Beast Wars series, too, where they were faced with how do we turn a Tyrannosaurus Rex into a robot? Well, one of his arms is going to be the T-Rex's head, and the other arm will be like a normal arm. That's a neat idea, creating a little sense of asymmetry to your character, especially if you're doing something that is more fantastical. It invites the imagination to say, how does that affect how this character behaves, the fact that they have this different, this asymmetry to them, that one part of the body is so exaggerated than another part of the body. So, okay, those are just some of the various things I think about when designing characters. Perhaps I can get with Mark and Kevin to do a more formalized discussion about this, maybe get some other artists involved in talking about the different things we think about in character design. I know that some of the folks on the Twitters, some of the people out there have recently written books on this. I'm blanking on the guy's name right now. He was just talking about having a book on character design. I know there's lots more people who could talk about this. And as I said at the top, there's no one way to get at this thing. I just thought I'd share a few of my thinking processes. Processes? How about that? How Euro of me. Okay, so who am I? I'm Jersey Drozd. JDrozd.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for subscribing to this content. We really couldn't do this without you. But by the time you're listening to this, if you're listening to this the day it updates, I will be at the Upfair, upfair.org. And I hope you follow along on the Twitters and or on the Facebooks or on the Comics Are Great site, because I'm going to be posting updates from the show. I'm going to try to shoot some videos and audios and all sorts of things, photos from the show to give you guys a sense of what's going on there. Ideally, I'd love to even do some live streaming, but I'm doing a workshop every other hour, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off, but I'll give it a maximal try, everybody. So thank you once again, and I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. Until then, remember, everybody.
Today we met Garth, who to some people looked like a monster. But Garth wasn't a monster. He was a good person with a noble soul. And in the end, his beauty showed through. Real beauty comes from inside, which is why ugly people can sometimes be the most beautiful people to know, and why people who look beautiful sometimes act very ugly. Being beautiful on the outside is all right, but being beautiful on the inside, that's the best.